They step into the biggest shows with the biggest names. And sometimes they get written on or off in a moment's notice. It's time to find out all the dramatic details of what it's like to be a guest star. With your host, Pete Ferrero.
Let's go.
There you are. Hello.
Hi.
This is really awesome. Thank you for doing this.
You're welcome.
I'm glad.
I mean, if anyone, why not me?
Right. Exactly.
I know all about this shit. So.
You. I mean, in all seriousness, when I was looking up like guest star people, I was like, yeah, but Paula Marshall has really kind of done this forever, right?
So, yes, I'm so old. And I think my first, guest spot, one of the first anyway, was Seinfeld.
Like, yeah.
What? Come on.
Right. I want to ask you about that. Okay. Well, hey, welcome to Guest Star. I'm here with Paula Marshall, who has done so many iconic things and been a part of culture as a guest star. You know, you've been on shows as a series regular. So you've been a part of the acting world for a very long time and some really big things. I mean, you're currently in something that's huge right now, which is, you know, everybody's talking about with Euphoria.
Yeah. That's crazy, right? I mean, finally. I was so excited Marsha actually got something to say. I freaked out when I read the script. I was like, Sam, you know you wrote this for Marsha. He's like, I know.
Wait a minute. Let me go back and look. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, he never said much. So, and I was fine with that because I never fucked up my lines. So.
Right. All right. Let's go back to the beginning, though. Tell me about where the acting bug started with you.
Gosh. I grew up in Maryland, and unlike most of the kids like now, or you start acting in high school, I never did that. I was captain of the pom-pom squad, so I never got any like theater experience, but I modeled, believe it or not.
Oh, I believe it.
back in the 80s, and I met a woman named Jan Stevens and Jay Sumner, and Jay was kind of like in charge of this agency. She was a booker at a panache modeling agency, and she kind of turned me into the actress that I am today. She said, we were at this restaurant bar in DC called Champions. Mm. And we were having a drink, and she said, you know, you really are so much more interesting in person than you are in a piece of paper in a photo. And I think you should be an actress. I'm like, who do you know? She goes, a lot of people. So cut to when I ended up moving to New York, she introduced me to an old friend manager, Davian Littlefield, who was kind of a big manager at the time in New York City. So I moved to New York. I modeled. That was kind of like my waitressing job, which paid a lot more, and I didn't have to work as often.
And you didn't have to remember anything.
Nothing. So you just kind of showed up, and they put hair and makeup on you, and you stood there. And so it was kind of my waitressing job while I studied acting with a guy named Tony Abeson. And that was kind of the beginning.
Well, when you were I'm curious for you, when you weren't really someone who did any acting in high school. So do you feel like, and I'm sure you've now been around other actors who have that experience, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so for you studying acting, you came from it from really nothing. So you were just fresh to it.
Yeah. Although my mom did save this thing from elementary school. It's like, you know, when you do those profile pictures and it's black and then there's white, and it said on there, I want to be an actress. And she showed it to me one day after I became an actress. I was like, oh my God, I had no idea. I think it was maybe 8 or 9. But no, I didn't really have the bug. It just kind of happened. So it's strange.
I don't know. I've talked to people that's had that experience too. It's an interesting way, different way of coming into it. You know what I mean? For someone that's known they were 5 and all that stuff, you know, that we've always hear about, but it's definitely cool. And you did a soap, right? Is that where?
Oh yeah. So I moved to New York City, and I think one of my first jobs after doing commercials, which is kind of like the door opening to acting, because it's like a one day acting job and you get a lot of money. So that's always fun, or used to anyway, for commercials. I did One Life to Live, and I don't even remember the character's name. It wasn't a big part, but
Kelly Weston, I think. Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Well, this is an IMDb that's helpful.
Well, you could have, yeah. Yeah. Like that and you look it up. Yeah. So I worked as the bartender, and like with Robert Woods, I think his name was. And yeah, so that was kind of like my introduction, I guess. And then, you know, pilot season, which kind of used to be more of a thing than it is now. Every spring I would fly out to LA and I would audition for things and meet everybody and drive around and pick up scripts because no one had computers then. I'm that old that you would go and pick up a script in the box at your agent's like after hours. You were so excited and you'd look to see like how many scripts you got. And that meant you had that many auditions for that week or whatever. Now it's so easy, like click. Oh, there's the script, click.
And the audition's probably like this too, right? It's probably like on Zoom now. It's not even an in-person thing. God,
it's so hard. I have a room now that's called the tape room. So I put myself on tape up there. I've got beautiful light. I've got the backdrop. I'm kind of like I'm a photographer by hobby. And so it's fun to have this little room, although it's just for taping. It's not for any kind of photography work that I do. So it's weird, but the callbacks are hideous. Like, especially for comedies, timing, there's a lag. If the person's not that good, I'm like, hey.
Wi-Fi issue, whatever.
But there's like no room. There's no people. There's no nothing. So, I mean, and I haven't booked a comedy on Zoom yet. I booked some dramas, but it's not fun. I can't, part of me loves it because I get to do it when I want. I get to edit it, the best scene that I think I look good in and I'm funniest or whatever. But there's no one there besides your husband or your daughter reading with you.
Yeah. I'm curious the process in that time period though, of going on auditions and like now you're in this, right? So now you're in the bubble of I'm an actor, right? You're you know, yes. I didn't even know I wanted to do this. Now I'm doing it. So now you're full throttle and you're going out on auditions and you know, I think there's always a constant thing in any person's profession where you're comparing, especially in acting, you're comparing to other people that you're sitting in a waiting room. And now you're like, we're all up for this.
Yeah.
What is that like for you at that time in that time period?
You know what? I was one of those girls who I would call up my friend and say, hey, you should read for this.
Amazing.
Because if I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it. Just because I tell Laura Layton that she should read for it or anybody else, you know, Machen Amick, we become friends. I miss the rooms. We call them like the rooms. It's those hallways that you're waiting outside to go in the room and you get to know a lot of people. I remember Mariska Hargitay. I dropped that for you. We knew each other from, you know, the rooms around, and we auditioned for a film. It was a kind of a callback, and I'll never forget. I've told this story before. I don't know if anyone remembers it or not, but it was for a film with cute English guy married to a model, used to be. Come on. Anyway, it'll come back to me. He was there and we were reading with him, and Mariska comes out after her audition and she was pissed. And I'm like, what happened? She goes, you know what the director said to me? Don't cry. You're not pretty when you cry. She said, fuck you, and walked out. And I'm like, oh, Mariska Hargitay. I am like the biggest fan. And then right. I went in and I didn't cry because who knew how pretty I was when I cried.
Right. They took that advice though. I'm not crying.
Don't cry unless it's pretty cries. But yeah, that's where you get to meet, you know, your people and the rooms and from around. And I really do miss that for sure.
Yeah, especially in that time period, I would imagine that it was, you know, that was the way of the world. And that's how you were finding
all of that
sort of helps in the networking process of like, oh, Paula would be great for this. Or even if you saw somebody, you know, oh, she would be great for this, or he would be great for this, right? There's a part of that.
There's a back and forth. I have actor friends who would, you know, email me or call me and say, yeah, you should read for this thing. It's really good. Because I don't know, maybe like your agent just didn't clock it or something. But
for me now, the first place I saw you is The Wonder Years.
Oh, The Wonder Years.
But there is also Life Goes On. So I don't know what comes, like, I don't know if it's what's the chicken and the egg there. Right. But hey, I don't know which one's first. But
me neither. Wait a minute. Life Goes On. So I was in that and I was in The Wonder Years.
Yeah. No memory.
You know, I really should have Googled myself before I did this. So I'd remember all these things.
But
I guess Wonder Years was first.
I mean, they're two huge shows. You know what I mean? I mean, The Wonder Years, particularly, I mean, I think when you came into the Wonder Years, it was in the last season of the Wonder Years too. So I think it was, you were dating Wayne, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You had a kid and all this. What was your experience like with a show like that?
I was very new to work, but, you know, starting to work here and there. Just the, how professional everyone was. Dan Lauria was just this amazing guy. Fred, I used to joke because Fred was young and he would have to go to school. So if he was in a scene with me, it was a piece of tape and a C stand. And sometimes they would say, oh, do you want his stand in to stand there and kind of look at the act, the stand in? And then someone else, like the script supervisor, would talk, do his lines. I'm like, no, give me a piece of tape. Well, you cut to years later, I'm working on a TV show with Jimmy Burrows, and Fred decides to show up and say hi to Jimmy because they were working on the same lot or something. And he comes up to me, he's like, Paula. And I didn't recognize him. He goes, it's Fred, Fred Savage. And I go, oh, I'm sorry, I need a piece of tape. And he's like, oh my God, that's very funny. And I'm like, literally, that's what I remember about any kind of back and forth with you and me. I mean, it was a treat. But I think when you're so young, you don't, you just kind of go and it happens and then it's gone. You're not really taking it all in necessarily. I think that happens later.
You know? But a couple things about this is it's interesting because you come in, you're there's a whole thing about being an actor and then going in from audition, getting jobs. But then you come to a show like that, which is so hugely successful. And all of the actors like Fred and all those guys, they're huge stars at that point.
Yeah.
So what is that perspective like as a guest star? You're learning that world. And you only really have about 10 days, maybe max to kind of like, and you were there for a few episodes. So you probably got
Yes. I think because they were so nice, I wasn't intimidated. There was a freedom and an openness, and a welcoming to the guest stars, I should say. I think Rob Lowe's brother was on that, or was that the other one? Life Goes On. Chad was on one of them, but they were nice. So they didn't intimidate me. And as you know, when you meet someone and you aren't him, then you get nervous. Then you're like, oh God, I can't screw up and I got to make sure my lines. But no, everyone was so nice that I felt very much part of it, especially then when you're recurring and you kind of come back, you know, a couple times. I wasn't really scared. I probably should have been.
That comes up a couple of times where you go on for a guest star probably, and then they're like, well, we're going to bring you back for a couple of more things, right? That especially happened. On those because it happens in two of those shows, Life Goes On and The Wonder Years. But So what is that call like for you at that time? It must have been super exciting.
Well, I think I can't really remember if it started out being one and then it turned into something. Mm. It was, you know, just coming from not knowing anybody, you know, I'm not related to Penny or Gary.
Right. I know that's a popular question.
Yeah, not related. I even met Gary Marshall on a film project and I had him write me a note that said, Paula is not my daughter and Penny's my sister or something. And he was trying to clear up all of that for everybody.
I love that.
This little note. I just couldn't believe I got to do it. And my luck, you know, I worked hard, but I didn't start when I was 16. So I kind of came to California, you know, later in the game. But I looked really young, and that always is good. But just kind of pinching myself because I would get one thing and then I'd get another thing and I'd get it. I'm like, ooh, maybe I'm okay. Maybe I'm kind of good at this.
That's the coolest thing about your career is that really you don't have a period where you stop working. Like you're working show to show. And I think so many actors would love to have that happen for them, but you have been blessed in that way that, you know, you are very good. And also, you know, the it just happens that way. And there's probably a hustle and a drive and all of that stuff that goes with it, right?
Well, I you never give up. A lot of women will give up. Sure. Like, no, I'm not going to. I decided I was doing this, as my husband would say, we're lifers. This is what we do. You know, it maybe it would have been different if any number of my many, many, many shows would have lasted more than two seasons. Like maybe it would have, I would have been, you know, Julie Bowen, that like you do one thing, or Mariska, 2000 years later, Mariska is still on that show. It's so crazy how, because a friend of mine, I was talking about how, you know, one thing hits and the other thing doesn't. And, you know, we read for all kinds of things. And when you're young, there's so many different things. And I really just wanted a comedy. But, you know, the things you pass on that you're like, meh, I like it. And then they're huge hits.
Give me something that you pass
on. I know. I knew you were going to say that. I can't really, like my husband has, I think, has that more. Like these dramas, these things, procedural things, which we don't really like doing. They're not as fun. And it's too, like more of a story and more about the character. But, you know, back in the day when you had to pick and choose, or early on, you would book something and then you're like, oh, if I take this, then what's back, what's later on? You don't know. Now it's like, what is it? I'll read for it. Like, really, my t-shirt just says I'm paying for private school. So for my dog.
Right. Well, one more on the Wonder Years. Because that's the last season of that show. Are you, and I know that that show is speculative, like they didn't really know that it was going, they didn't know if it was coming back, and then it got canceled. Are you even aware of some of that? So, because I mean, at that point, there would have been a potential, you know, if they come back for another season, I'm sure your character, Bonnie, would have maybe potentially came back and done more with that character. Are you even aware that that's going on?
No, I don't think, I certainly wouldn't have known anything about that. No. And it is a pleasant surprise when, like on Californication, it was supposed to be one episode. And I remember during the scene where we're having sex and there was a moment where he falls off of me and he picks up
it's hilarious,
and he pukes. Well, there's a reason. So he pukes, right? And then we're standing there naked and he's holding in the puke. And I'm like, oh my God, that's really very realistic puke. And he goes, you know, it would be, I go, it's kind of making me sick. And he goes, you know, it'd be funny. Wouldn't it be funny if you puked? And I'm like, oh my God, a sympathy puke. That would be genius. So like, I raise my hand and I quickly, I'm like, Hey guys, Scott Winant, the director. I'm like, could I puke? And he goes, Paula, no one wants to see a naked girl puke. I'm like, let me do one take of a puke, you know, before we turn around the camera, let me just do one before the people come in. He's like, oh, all right, let's put the corn chowder in Paula's mouth. And Maya's my daughter, sorry.
Yeah, so you're good. Yeah.
It was a second. Mm-hmm. And so we do I puke. It was one take. I think I even like still have my G-string on, because like at one point I put like a little bit of clothes on just so I'm not as naked. Mm-hmm. So I think I see it, because no one really thought they were going to use it.
Right.
And then I ad-libbed something. Like I giggled and I said, we were just so high. I don't know what happened. And then David Duchovny runs over to the writer and says, give Paula the button. The button is the last line, the last little joke, the last click before
you start. Okay. The scene. Yeah.
So, and I remember going over there and them saying, oh shit, that was really funny. And maybe the writer said something like, you naked puke on camera in one take, you're coming back next season. And I came back next season for like 10 episodes.
Yeah.
It was a very long story.
But that's a great story though. No, that's a great story though, about how trajectory can change just from one improv scene.
I kind of feel like that's why they did it. And they're like, ooh, I think this girl would be good with David. And let's kind of see where that would go. They just, you know, they like you, right? And you're nice, maybe. Yeah. They like to work with you. And I bring cookies and stuff to set. You bribe them a little bit, and then they hire you back. So
that's great. And doing the nude stuff and all that, Nick, you've done a bunch of that. So that's it's a part of your world, right?
Yeah. Yes, I have.
Has never been a problem for you?
No, I think for Californication, I had 4 days notice. 4 days.
So you have to basically decide, are you good with this or not?
Well, you kind of don't. You're like, well, they're not really, I'm not really going to be naked. Am I? I mean, that's what those girls do, but I'm an actress. I don't really have to take my clothes off. You kind of go, it's not really going to be, but you're on the set and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm pretty naked. It's like, I think I just gotten over the chicken pox, believe it or not. It was so weird. I got chicken pox like really, or no, that was a different nude scene.
Okay.
It was a movie called The New Age, where I think I got the chicken pox, and then they did have to do some body makeup on me because I had chicken pox still on me. You know, it's uncomfortable. It's never like fun, and it's weird, and you know, it's a closed set, and everyone can, you know, talk about stuff, and hopefully you're working with someone who's not taking advantage and, you know, making you feel uncomfortable. And David was great. I talked football while we were naked, like waiting to roll. I would look back at him as he was, you know, doing his stuff and talk about football. You know?
I'm curious. I mean, look, the conversations are evolving about things like this, and you've been working for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you've seen, back in the day, doing that was probably fine, whatever. You know what I mean? But now there's instructors, there's people on. What is your thoughts on some of that? Like, you don't need the, like, I'm good. I don't need the instructor, right? No. I'm the instructor.
Yeah. I think it's really good. So each person feels comfortable with the other one, because sometimes you don't work with nice, respectful people. And you want to know what's going to go down, where he's going to touch you, what he's going to, you know, where his mouth is going. I've been very lucky. I'm also very vocal. If I don't like something, I will say something. But a lot, maybe women, maybe men aren't as comfortable on set to speak up and stick up for themselves. Maybe working on Euphoria, talk about being naked. Oof, just glad Marsha's not naked. But I would, if I had more than 4 days, I would do it for Sam. I would do it for Sam.
We're in an interesting conversation that I was going to bring up later, but yeah. I mean, there's this whole thing about Sam, right? I mean, like, I love Euphoria. I think it's incredible. I'm all in, but there is this, anytime the show has this sort of fan base that's like ravaged and they're talking in communities, all these things come up, and we're in a different time period, and he gets a lot of, you know, shit, I guess is the best word. I don't know. You know, what is your thoughts on some of that that's been coming up?
You know, it's interesting. I've only heard the hearsay about it, just like you're mentioning. Mm-hmm.
It's very Judge Judy of you, by the way you said
that. Right. Yeah. I have one, Marsha doesn't take her clothes off. I have not experienced anything like that on set. I don't know if there's any issues. I mean, and I don't want to speak for anybody, but you know, it's called Euphoria. We knew what this show was about. The pilot was very clear. It's a very sexual show, but I'm pretty sure if the girls aren't comfortable, you talk to the director and you go, hey, can we do it a little like this? But you know, I don't know. I think there's a way around it. There's what is her name? Oh shit, not Cassie. One of the actresses on the show. Mm-hmm. I've never seen her boobs. So why is that? Like, I've never seen them. I'm pretty sure you, Alexa. Like, I don't think I've ever seen her boobs. Have I? Maybe once. I think it works. But here's the great thing about Sam. Although there's so many great things about Sam. One, he's a freaking genius. Like, he's like
the show is incredible.
He's like magic. Like, he is so, he's one of these artistic, you know, he'll just go like, we're going to shoot till we get it. There's no time thing. There's no, oh, we got to turn her. It's like, let's play. Let's make something amazing. And the camera work, and it's stunning. The lighting, I can't even say enough nice things about it. But you know what Sam does? Sam's like, we're going to see some tits. I'm going to see some dick then. I mean, it's fair. Fair. And I'm like,
the scene that you do in that episode 4 of season 2, you know, with Eric, it's really next level. You know what I mean? Really, the performance is really great on everybody's part. Why don't you talk? I mean, I know we're in Euphoria, that's fine. But what, tell me about doing that scene and being in that room in that moment. That was some really incredible stuff.
In Euphoria. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, Eric Dane won. I can't believe those lines. He never messed up once. And it was like a 2-page monologue. I mean, one, it was, I always am thinking, oh, we're going to giggle. Cause it's like me and Jacob and Zach, my boys up there looking at him, and you're trying not to get cause he has so much to say and to focus on, but you know, it is kind of funny. He's peeing on the floor. But it was more impressive just to see how we were going to do it. It wasn't a lot of goofing around. It wasn't super serious either. but again, I think Sam is he sees the reality of what it could be and what it should be, and he doesn't shy away from it. And I have a friend that had a serious heroin problem and said when he saw the scene with Zendaya and everyone confronting her and the argument with her mom, he's like, I had to turn it off. It was so real. And I've never seen anything that real in film or television. And Sam is a genius. I'm like, yes, yes, he is. Like, he just gets it. And he's just going to do what he wants to do. And then there's magic. So
It's interesting, and I'm going to turn this into going back, and we'll come back to Euphoria. But it's interesting, though, today in the culture that we live in with social media, it's so hugely talked about, and everybody has a platform to kind of discuss this, right? Oh, they can dive into it. When you did Seinfeld, that was viral in a different way, right? Like, that was viral in the way that everybody around the water cooler, or whatever they called it back then, was talking about this line, you know.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Anything's wrong with that. So you have a couple of like these moments where you're in something that's culturally iconic, and going back to Seinfeld and working on that show, what was that experience like for you? And before you even talk about what it's like to come off of a big episode where everybody's talking about it, talk to me about getting it and being a part of that.
Wow. I remember reading for the part, and Jerry was in the room, which for guest stars, he was a producer, of course, but you always think, oh, they're not going to be in there. And I walk in, I'm like, oh my God. Now, Seinfeld wasn't as big a hit. I think it was like season 3 or 4 or something, that the one I did was. So it was a show, but it wasn't as big yet. I walk in, I read, he's there, which is impressive. I book it, and I swear it was maybe my first or second sitcom. I had done another one. I don't remember the name. It never aired. So I always consider this kind of my first sitcom I've ever done. I didn't even know to like hold for the laugh, huh? Because I never kind of went to like acting school for sitcoms in California.
Sure. Right.
So Jason Alexander, I remember the director had said something like, Paula, don't forget to hold for the laugh. I'm like, sorry, my bad. And I was like, Jason, what does that mean? He goes, well, like, you know, the audience is going to laugh, so you got to like ride the wave so that you kind of wait for it. And I was like, oh, okay, I got it. I remember being so just amazed at Michael Richards. He would do those crazy things backstage and entrances, and kind of he runs them in his head. Julia, I swear, was Julia pregnant? And is that why she wore the jacket there? I'm not sure. I ended up, they rewrote the scene, the end scene where I have to kiss Jerry Seinfeld. And I remember coming in after lunch and getting the changes, and Jerry was there on the sofa. And we're all kind of looking at it after lunch or something. And I walk in, I'm like, oh my God, I have to kiss Jerry Seinfeld.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And he goes, I get to kiss Paul Marshall. And so that was kind of, you know, he's not really an actor, he's a stand-up, and so it was kind of uncomfortable and he was nervous, but my God, the man kissed a lot of women on that show.
Sure did.
So I was just one of many. But it was, I mean, just, not that there's anything wrong with it. Like when Henry Winkler comes up to you and is like, oh my God, not that there's anything wrong with that, Paula, like famous people remember that line. And to this day, people will text me, moms from school, oop, guess what's on TV, watching Paula as a teenager. It's the funniest thing. And I'm so glad I got to do it. That will go down for sure.
I mean, it's definitely, I mean, I feel like today with the way culture is, I think it does, it's an awesome line and whatnot. And everybody's looking back now on things, right? In this, you know, but I mean, after that aired, How did that change things for you? Did it change things for you?
It did. People, it was the door that opened to the sitcom. You're still just a guest star, so it still took a lot before you could book one. And I think my first sitcom that I booked, there was a Wild Oats, which came out. It was with Paul Rudd, Janna Marie Hupp, and Tim Conlon. And it was the same year a show called Friends was also coming out. And I remember someone interviewing us and coming to our set going, well, you know, there's another show on like another network. And we're like, eh, whatever, about Friends. And you're about Friends. And we're like, yeah, but.
Yeah, but this is Wild Oats. We don't care.
Wild. Right? We were wild. Yeah. So I think that was probably like my first sitcom. And then people saw, producers, writers, directors saw that, hey, Paula Marshall can hold her own on a sitcom stage, on a set. And that's a big deal because I never knew I was funny. Not really. You know, I wasn't really funny in Seinfeld. They were funny. I just.
Well, you, but if it had been someone else, I don't know if it would have been at, like, it would definitely been funny, but you gave a certain something to that, really.
Well, one of the certain something was a very bad New York accent. Like it was like Jersey. It was like, everything ended like really high. Like what? Anyway, I don't want to talk about it. But yeah, it was just, I don't know. That was just like kind of the beginning of, I did clock. I remember looking at Julia Louis-Dreyfus and maybe we were talking about, you could have kids, you know, you're on a sitcom, you work 3 weeks, you're off for a week. It's 9 to 5, if that. It's a great lifestyle and it's so much fun. Like what's better than making people laugh all day? I don't know. I do not know. So that kind of opened the door to the possibility of doing this for a living. So then my focus was, I'm doing a sitcom. I love it so much that you get high from it, from that audience and the laughter. And so that was really my focus for a very long time.
I did an interview, a little bit of a deep question, maybe. I did an interview with this actor, Mike Starr. I don't know if you've run into him through the years, in Dumb and Dumber and Goodfellas. He's been in a whole slew of things. And he said that there were times in his career, and he's worked regularly, you know, as you did, where he wasn't sure if the next job was coming in. And that sometimes of those in-betweens, even though with the immense amount of work that he has done and knowing like something will turn up, right? There's the time in the in-between. I like to ask actors about this. How do you deal with the time in between where you don't know what's next?
This is the key. Live under your means. I don't know who told me that. Because you never know. You have to, you know, you save for a rainy day, but you don't, just because you're on a show and you're making a lot of money as a series regular, God, I know this better than anybody. You look at that big check coming in, but you're like, I don't know how long it's going to last. So I invest my money. I buy real estate. I buy the home. So I'm not paying out someone else's mortgage, as small as a house or as whatever. I live under my means. I don't splurge on things that aren't necessary. I've never been like into shoes. I'd rather buy a new lens, you know?
Yeah.
That's just something that when I want to teach my daughter too, that you, you know, cause you never know. You never know.
Beyond financially though, as an actor, mm-hmm. some of that rejection and some of that uncertainty must be difficult for any actors or people in worlds like that. What is your advice
Well, I kind of feel like if I didn't find success early on, I probably would have given up, because it wasn't like, oh my God, this is my, to be on stage, to do it, to, it was really not my thing. I fell into it. I found success and then I found joy in it. So the joy keeps me coming back. I kind of feel like in any profession, if you don't find success, if you don't get a job doing what you're doing, maybe it's not the right thing for you.
Sure.
It can't be for everybody.
Yeah.
But I found enough success and enough people said, you're good. Like I remember reading for something and, you know, you don't book a lot and you can't take it personally. And I never really did. I never really did. Like there was a casting person, I don't know who it was, casting director, sent me a VHS. Now, for those of you who don't know what VHSs are, they're like big tapes of you and they put it in and they gotta rewind. It takes a while to rewind. So I read for something and I guess the agent sent it to me or sent it through my agent. Anyway, it was me reading for this part in the movie. Sarah Jessica Parker's on it. Julianne Moore's on this tape. They didn't just send the part of me. And the casting director was like, please tell Paula, she's not getting this part, but I need her to know how good she is.
Oh, that's amazing.
Wow, that's like really cool. And I watched it and I'm like, oh yeah, why am I not getting it? Because sometimes it has nothing to do with you.
Sometimes it's already in stone, sort of, these things. Just, the cards have already been dealt. You know,
whatever.
What I mean?
But you know what? I keep reading. I have no problem reading. You know, a lot of people, especially today, it's just offer only.
I was going to say, are you getting a lot of that now? I mean,
I have gotten that before. Like Cupid, a TV show that I did. I kind of feel like Cupid was an offer. It was an offer. And I'm like, you guys didn't even read me. But I guess the guy that I worked with on Spin City or something was right. You never know, but I will read for anything. And most of the time it's because I want to prove them wrong. Mm. There's a casting director. I did a pilot that did not go with John Corbett and Jennifer Beals. It was called Widow Detective on CBS. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. It's a drama, which I never really wanted to do. And it's CBS and it's going to last forever. And I'm going to get rich.
It's going to be one of those long lasting dramas.
I will be Mariska Hargitay. And I thought for sure it was going to last. The casting director didn't want to see me because she goes, Paula's funny. She's just funny. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm just funny? Because it was kind of my transition from comedies to then, well, let's see what else is out there. So my agent, David Letterman, not that David Letterman.
That would be weird if that David Letterman.
It would be weird.
Client was Paula.
But David was like, Paula, we're really trying to get you in. You're really perfect for it. But you have brown hair and the other two girls they cast have brown hair. I'm like, I'll bleach my hair. Who fucking cares? So I get in knowing the casting director was like, Paula's just funny. Davis Guggenheim. I'm thinking the Guggenheim family. He's very nice and cute. And I really like this guy. I read for him. It was him, the casting director. And I don't remember her name. That's very sad. Maybe I blocked it out. But I do the scene. It was three scenes. And two of the scenes, I had to like break down sobbing. Not easy to do in a scene. Like, you know, just, it's 2 o'clock. Let's go in there and do the thing. And it's not real. And so I'm crying. I ended up on the floor because I like collapse. And I look up and I look at the casting director and I go, you see, I'm not just funny, with like tears growing down. And then Davis Guggenheim goes to me, Paula Marshall, you are a fine actress. And then I don't get the part. I hear nothing. 3 weeks later, I get a text from Davis Guggenheim. He goes, I've been fighting for you. Guess what? I'm like, what? Got the part. Like, you never know. Yeah. Sometimes you got to go in there and you got to go, fuck you. I'm going to prove you wrong. Like I want to make it hard. My husband and I always say this, let's make them angry at themselves that they're not going to hire me, that they see the tape and like, well, we should hire them. They're really good.
Yeah. Well, why are we not hiring Paula? You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. But there's an argument amongst each other, right? You almost want to create a conflict inside the room. Yeah.
So like, you know, if I have time, I hate auditioning. It's awful. But like, there's nothing better than like fighting for something and then winning it. It's amazing.
Yes. Talking to me about Spin City, you mentioned it briefly. That was an amazing time. Yeah.
I loved it. It was the season two. Carla Gugino kind of replaced Carla. Not really. I mean, Carla was there and I know Carla, one of the girls in the rooms. I came in for like a season. Oh my gosh. Michael Fox is so amazing. I remember still kind of early on, I don't think he knew who I was, and he shouldn't, but we did the first scene. It was like this walk and talk down that kind of like political hallway where they did it. And they never did that on sitcoms. They kind of went, like the audience didn't see it. And then it kind of came out and then you come out to the big stage at the office. Anyway, we do it. And it was like the first scene in front of an audience and I get a big laugh and we go to do another take. And Michael, and I'll never forget this. And he goes, Paula Marshall, you just.
Good.
Another thing. Okay, sorry.
Go ahead. And Michael J. Fox, I'll pick it up right from here.
Yeah, okay. So Michael, it might keep raining. Michael J. Fox said to me, hang on. And I have this in my head and I lost it. He goes, Michael J. Fox says to me, not many people can hold a candle to me out there. And you just did. And I died. And scene. That was it. I was like,
oh my God.
I mean, that was one of the greatest moments of my life.
That is really incredible. I mean, he's such an incredible actor and, you know, all that stuff. Did you stay in touch with him through what he's gone through and all that?
Not really. We didn't know what was happening. Really, we knew that I knew we had like a masseuse coming in. And I think I maybe for a second I did. I remember buying him a baby Taylor because he loved playing guitar. And I had a baby Taylor with me. Don't be impressed. I'm really not a good guitar
player. I got so excited right there.
I'm not. But it was like a travel guitar. And it sounds really good. And it's little. And I would see his guitars. And I said, you know, you don't have a baby Taylor. You need a baby Taylor. So that was kind of like my parting gift to him. But no, we didn't really stay in touch. I am crazy about him, though.
He's amazing. He's an incredible actor, always. Going to something like Cupid, which you just kind of talked about, I think that's one season Cupid happens, right?
I mean, so
tell me about that process. You do the show. I mean, everybody's excited. This is a great show. It is a great show. And you've had a few of those here where it's like they don't bring the show back. What is that for an actor like? What is that?
It's like going down your throat, ripping out your heart and your lungs and putting it on the street, and then a trash truck goes over. That's what it feels like. You're like, what do you mean?
I get it.
Yeah. What do you mean it's not going forward?
Yeah. The season was so good. What are you talking about? Yeah.
Cupid, me and Jeremy, I mean, not to toot my own horn, but not many people can fucking hit the ball back to Jeremy Piven. And this bitch could.
That's
so
right.
I'm like, what do you mean it's not getting picked up? It was ABC Saturday night after Fantasy Island. Like, you can't really blame that, but it was on one of the lists of the shows that never should have been canceled. Cupid was on. I could have been again. I'm obsessed with Mariska Hargitay and her career, but that show was so sweet and so funny and so thoughtful. It's super sad that it didn't go more years.
I'm curious. We're talking about this, about, you know, you doing guest star stuff and you wanting to have one of these shows. And I'm sure you're friends with people who have had that experience where they, or maybe they've had one show like I do a 90210 podcast, like a 90210, right? Like one of those major shows where that's it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So,
it's interesting because if you do one of those big shows and that's it, is it because that's all they see and they can't, you're only that? Or I have so much money, I never really liked acting. Maybe I don't need to do it. Like, who knows?
There's a lot that goes into it, but I guess what I'm asking is, is that something that you want, is to have one of those shows?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I really would want it to be a sitcom. I would want to maybe executive produce and or write. I've been writing things here and there. And developed one and made a pilot with one, but didn't get picked up. And, you know, but that's kind of amazing. It's another high, just another way to get high, is making people laugh.
Absolutely.
That's really what I would want. I would want a sitcom.
On that note about comedy versus drama, you know, I mean, those are different worlds and there's all different versions of sitcoms. There's some like the Modern Family you did, which is no laugh track. It's all kind of in it happening, but then Seinfeld laugh track. And a lot of them have been laugh track. How do you, or even in studio laughter where there's a live studio audience.
Yeah.
That's where I'm getting to is what do you feel about doing the live studio audience stuff?
That's all I want to do. I don't like the single camera because you might as well be doing a drama. I mean, yeah, you make people laugh, but I don't hear it. So it's you see the little, like the people laugh after the, if you get no, I like the back and forth, the audience, it's like theater, although I've never done any theater. So
I was going to ask you.
Right? Never. Have you done, again, I was a pom-pom girl in high school.
No interest in theater.
None.
Right. I love going to the theater. Right. Yeah.
Theater's great, but I didn't want to be a part of it. But no, I would, the single camera, I mean, I've done it. I did a show called Hidden Hills and that was really, really fun. Really fun. I did that with Dondre Whitfield, who were still very good friends. And my friend Stacey Galena did that and with me. That was better than most, but I still prefer the audience feedback.
Back to Seinfeld, when you did, that was a live studio audience thing, right? So were all, was that like massively hilarious when, you know,
it was, I mean, Jason and they're all so funny. There's not a, I mean, I was the least funny person on there because, you know, guest stars are on sitcoms aren't really supposed to be funny unless you're like Rob Riggle and you come in and you're just like the crazy person. No, you know, usually you're the young girl and you're not funny and you just set them up to hit the funny ball out.
But in the dramas, sometimes as a guest star, you do get meaty parts because they're going to kill you off. They're not going to kill up, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Or
they're going to do something really crazy.
Dying and crying, for sure.
yeah, because they don't want the lead doing any of that. They don't want the lead doing any of that. So you need, yeah.
I've had to cry a lot lately. I did this other show called As We See It on Amazon. And oh my God, it was like torturous, the crying. And although it was written so well that if it's well written, you can tap in and it's easy to cry. I don't think I've ever had the blower and you have to like water. Cause like if you cry, usually you have to start your normal and then the camera sees you well up and then you cry. I don't usually need tears because I'm a very emotional person. So I can kind of tap in. My poor husband that I can cry like this.
I know. Well, he doesn't know what's real or not. That's much. He's like, I don't know what we're doing right now.
How deep crying.
You're so good. I don't know how deep we are into this conversation.
No, because I'm not a great actress around him in real life.
Only okay, that's fair.
Cameras rolling and money is being thrown at me.
What about something you did, Murder in the First with Kathleen Robertson, who's obviously connected us together. Yes. Much love to her. She's a sweetheart and a friend of mine. What was like doing that show?
Oh my. I loved it. One, because it was Stephen Weber. I did a guest spot or maybe recurring on the Stephen Weber show. Weber show, I think it was called. And I ended up that once I was writing a script and Stephen and I were collaborating to do it together. And I'm still gonna, one day we're gonna do a sitcom. I'm sure of it. It was amazing. I mean, we shot it in San Francisco. It was very raw and I loved it. It was a great experience.
It's awesome. And she was cool. I mean, I don't know. Did you guys?
We didn't have any scenes together.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Or maybe we did, but
yeah, here and there. Right.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
And then of course, you know, I mean, you've done some cool things like the Law and Order thing, right? I mean, like you've done some of that, you've done, but do you like that universe or is that something that you know, like I'm no knock on Law and Order itself, but
none at all. I would never, it's just not my cup of tea. You know what I mean? If I'm going to have a cup of tea, it's going to be PG tips with some milk and sugar. That's what, if it's anything but that, I don't want it. It's just not something I like watching necessarily. I'm really picky with TV now and there's so much out there. But like comedies are hard. I haven't fallen in love with a comedy or a sitcom, I should say. Like The Great, love it. Wow, is that good? Like I can't even believe how good these people are.
Everybody is saying that. I haven't seen that yet. Yeah.
It's amazing. Like you can't, it's mind-blowing, funny. But I haven't seen a comedy, a sitcom in a very long time and it makes me super sad. So I'm Golden Girls Part Two. I'm thinking,
let's do it. Yeah, I love that show.
I'll do the hair and everything.
Going back, what about getting Euphoria? We talked a little bit about Euphoria and that's obviously something we should probably talk about a lot because people are, I mean, I'm hooked. It's amazing. So what was that like for you getting that show? I mean, this is
Mary Verneau is the casting director. Mm-hmm. I remember getting the script. And you're, as an actor, at least early on a couple of years ago, when it says Showtime or HBO, you're like, ooh, like this is good stuff. This is good TV. Mm-hmm. Before they had streaming stuff and everyone was doing television, like movie stars are now doing television, which we're like, hey, that's our job. Why just do your movies? But whatever, it's fine. It's a big room. So like Californication was Showtime, which I don't even think I had Showtime at the time. So booking that was amazing. Booking Euphoria, it was Mary Verneau. I go down and it was maybe like one paragraph, maybe two lines. I'm like, really, why am I like, this is nothing. But it's Mary Verneau who casts a lot of big projects. And I was like, oh, but it looks like a really good project. And so I read, and I remember even in the casting room, I was like, Would you like me to do a monologue? Should I do a dance? You know, I do tango and I swing. And, and like, just like, what else do you want from me? And I really don't know how I got it. I think, and I have said this before, I think Sam, we were talking on set one day, you know, waiting for the cameras to turn around. And I'm like, Sam, how did I get this part? You know, Marsha, this is before Marsha's big scene. I never say much, you know, maybe I'm just really believable as a mom and everyone, you like me and, you know, I'll bring cookies and I'll never be late and I won't, you know, a bitch in my trailer and not come out. You know, everyone knows me that I'm a good egg. So I think he said something about, I fell for you when you were in Hellraiser 3. I was like, what? Hellraiser? He's like, yeah. It's like, oh, okay. So maybe Sam had a crush on me. This is what I'm making up. Sam had a crush on me in Hellraiser 3 when he was a child. And that's why I'm in this show right now.
That's amazing. But that's great.
You never know. One job got me this job.
Yeah. Is that interesting for you though? Like, because I mean, like I remember a friend of mine was like, just I'll admit my little fandom for you here. A friend of mine was like, when that Seinfeld came up and was like, oh my God, it was so funny, the line. I was like, but the reporter, you know what I mean? So is that weird all these years later, a show that you did all this time ago brings this sort of stuff to the...
I don't know if weird is the right word. It just, it makes me happy that it stayed with people so long. Cause you know, if it stays with you, it touched you. And that makes me happy. That I like.
Yeah, I think that there is something about, you know, all of the work that you've done, that there's an authenticity to the character and to the person, and or there's a scene that's really funny and it was something that you did, and like in the Seinfeld, like you brought what it needed to make that so funny. And I think that just speaks to how incredible you are as an actress.
Aw, hang on, I'm writing you a check right now.
Is it weird? Like, Sam is the only writer on Euphoria.
Yeah.
And there's so many shows with writer's rooms and all of that stuff. What's your thoughts on that?
I feel like comedies have the writer's rooms.
Sure.
I'm not sure dramas, they might have the writer's room, but you don't like see them as much. I like it because I feel that there's no crisscrossing, and if someone writes it, no one has to communicate with the other person and make sure it's just Sam all the way.
It's his vision. It's the vision yeah. The way it should be. And it's not sort of muted by some other thought. And then we have to go to network and then everybody's going to talk about it. And we're in something, we've just done it. It would have been really great. You know,
I think it's cool the way like people are reading into, well, if so-and-so, she had a bigger part and then now she has a smaller part and you had a smaller part and now you have a bigger, you're like, it's just what happens. Sam just sees something and it triggers something else. And then he goes, oh, I wonder what that might look like. And Maude and Fez together, like, you know, you don't know how does art happen? It's not paint by numbers. You see something and it triggers something else. And then it is Euphoria.
Yes, it is. So what do you've got going on now? You've got some other projects coming up. What can you tell us about anything? What's happening?
I am working on a show on the CW called Walker. It's in Austin and I've been traveling back and forth. One of like the nicest sets I've ever been on. And I think I play like the evil person. I'm not sure. And I have a not great Texas accent, but
you're making it work.
I'm making it work.
You're Paul the Marshall. It's going to be good.
And then it's kind of pilot season. So, you're kind of, you know, I'm not 20 anymore, believe it or not. And there's less and less roles for someone, but, again, I'm a lifer. So you send me an audition, I'm going to put myself on tape and I hope it shoots in LA. That's really what I want. Yeah. I don't want to go on a plane and stay in a hotel and eat really fattening food. Cause that's what you do. I would like to be home. That's the best part of, you know, Euphoria shoots in LA as well. It should, cause it takes place in Los Angeles. So, you know, I'm just waiting for the next gig.
Before you leave, you've done a lot of great comedies with a lot of great comedians and actors. Is there a moment or a person that has in that world really kind of shaped you to want to do more comedy?
Well, I would think I know there was a moment when I saw Julia Louis-Dreyfus on Seinfeld. Again, it was my first comedy, so it certainly stuck with me and made quite an impression that she was this woman on the set, and she like had it, like everyone, she had everybody, and that power and that attention. And I was like, I could do that. I'm still waiting. I've done it, but I want it to just last a little longer.
Yeah, it's going to. I feel it. So
for now.
This has been great. Thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it so much. I'm a huge fan, so it means a lot to me.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. All right, cool. So stay in touch and all that fun stuff. All right, have a good one. All right, bye.